Today's podcast is sponsored by GenesisCare, national independent cancer care provider and experts in breast health, diagnostics and treatments.
Hello, welcome to And Then Came Breast Cancer, the podcast for everyone whose life has been touched by the disease. I'm Victoria Derbyshire, and my world changed in 2015 when I was diagnosed. I learned to my friends, my family, and of course, the nurses and the surgeons, and the anaesthetists and the porters and the registrars, everybody who helped ultimately to save my life. The Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity believes that no one should face the disease on their own, and wanted to create a podcast series which would be there 24 hours a day for those dark, what am I going to do moments when your life gets changed too. Oh, and I want to mention the chemotherapy nurses and the radiologists and the radiographers, because I think sometimes they get left out. Today's episode, I hope, will bring a little bit of joy. I remember after I got through my treatment, I said to myself, okay, now life is all about experiences, and that I was going to say yes to stuff that I might have never said yes to in the past, and stuff that might challenge me and take me out of my comfort zone. I've done that a little bit. I've danced topless twice on national TV for The Real Full Monty. I've got a bit of the bugs and slime treatment when I went into the castle in Wales for I'm a Celebrity. I would never have said yes to those things before breast cancer. I try to spend loads of time with my family and friends and do interesting things and have great nights. Today, I'm joined by three fantastic women who are also living up to their promises to live boldly and bravely. That's what this episode is called, bold and brave. And we are going to talk about what brave means in a moment, because for people who are going through cancer, who've gone through cancer, it can mean many different things. So as always, I ask them to introduce themselves. Ladies, tell our listeners who you are and tell us one thing you've done post-cancer that you would never have dreamt of doing pre-diagnosis, or maybe something that you want to do.
Hi, everyone. I'm Juliet. After diagnosis, I did lots of topless photo shoots, ended up on huge billboards in Piccadilly Circus and Times Square, amongst other places.
Oh, my God.
So I never would have done that before breast cancer. I have to say they are of my scars rather than my breasts. So that's me.
My name's Laurel, and after diagnosis, not quite as dramatic and impressive, but some of the brave things I did was starting to talk about myself a bit more. Prior to diagnosis, I wouldn't have thought it was the most interesting topic in any room, but suddenly, if you have breast cancer at 28, you become extremely interesting. So being able to talk about yourself honestly and authentically has been a brave thing that I've had to learn to do.
I'm Emma. One of the bold and brave things that I've done since my diagnosis is running through the streets of London in my underwear.
Why?
For a 10K. So it was a wonderful celebrate you vitality 10K with lots of several other wonderful women, actually, who'd also gone through cancer. But I remember it was, sorry, I have got to say that the decision to actually run in my underwear was so last minute that I was actually wearing black Primark knickers as opposed to kind of like...
Living the dream.
You're living the dream.
I wonder if I can ask each of you to tell us what happened with your treatment and how recently. Juliet, is it okay if I tell our listeners your age?
Yeah,
or you can tell listeners of our age, but you don't have to.
No, I'm 61. And I was diagnosed in 2016 when I was 54. It was a complete shock. I got picked up on my second routine mammogram. And I had invasive ductal carcinoma in my left breast. Massive shock. And I was told that I would have a lumpectomy and radiotherapy. And I thought, okay, that's sort of manageable. Still sounds horrific, but manageable. As it turned out, the surgeons couldn't get clear margins after the lumpectomy, so I had to have a mastectomy and chemotherapy and Herceptin, which is a targeted therapy for a specific type of tumour. And then I was left with one breast, which I didn't like because it was really big. It's like a 34 double G. Mm. Asked my surgeon if he would remove that as well, to which he said, no, definitely not.
Because it was a healthy breast.
Yeah, because it was a healthy breast. And I kind of understood that. But as time went on, I really disliked looking at myself in the mirror. And my breasts was the thing that I hated to see. Finally, 18 months after my first mastectomy, I had the second one. And I feel really good about that.
So last spring, I was living and working in Stockholm in Sweden with my partner, and I was diagnosed very out of the blue at the age of 28 with stage 2 invasive ductal carcinoma in my left breast just from finding a lump. I had to push a bit to get a biopsy because I was told, you know, I had no family history, the lump hurt, it moved, so it wasn't going to be anything. And so I was pretty much free and easy waiting for the results, very unbothered. Mm-hmm. And then through an automated messaging service, whilst I was sat at my desk at work, I found out I had cancer from the Swedish system. I was on my own. My partner was in New York for work. My parents were in the UK. No one could fly back in time to go to the first appointments with me. And after that, things moved quite quickly. I ended up moving my treatment over to the UK to have family support. And I did 16 rounds of chemotherapy, a double mastectomy. In that operation, they found out that my cancer had spread, so I had a further lymph node removal, radiotherapy, and now I'm on a very long-term course of hormone therapy. So that has kind of that all the side effects of chemically induced menopause alongside it for at least the next decade, probably.
Wow.
I don't know why I'm laughing. It's the only way I can kind of say it without having a bit of a panic.
Emma.
So I was diagnosed 13 years ago at the age of just coming up to 39 with a large 5-centimeter tumor in my right breast, lymph node involvement. I'd had a lump for years that I'd had checked years before, and as a result of but the changes occurred during IVF treatment that I was going through, which resulted in triplets. But I'd had lots of changes, so I was ignoring the bodily changes. And then I found a lump under my arm, which sort of sprung me into action. So I had chemo initially to shrink the tumour, followed by a mastectomy, lymph node removal, reconstruction, went on to Herceptin for 18 cycles, obviously chemo radiotherapy, and did really well physically, not so much emotionally, and then got my secondary diagnosis at the end of 2014, which it recurred in my skin. So I've been on treatment ever since, and that was obviously hugely terrifying, but I have done very, very well. I had a further recurrence at the beginning of 2019 in my other breast. And I was told I had a tumour in my lung, but that miraculously turned out to be benign. So I'm on targeted chemo every 3 weeks, currently doing really well and feel very, very grateful.
Bloody hell. Gosh. In particular, bearing in mind what you have told us, Laurel, and what you have just told us, Emma, can we just talk about this word brave? Because this episode is called Bold and Brave. Laurel, you said you felt you were being brave by talking about yourself and what you were experiencing in your life.
It's an interesting
one. What does this word brave mean to you, Emma?
You get told so often as a cancer patient or someone who's been through a diagnosis, we've all heard it, I don't know how you do it, you're so brave. But to me, I don't view myself as brave. I'm simply have responded and continue to respond in the way that I think everyone would, which is the ultimate goal and desire and longing to be here and to be here in the long term. Mm. We just put one foot in front of the other. So I think many people would agree with me. When you're in that crisis situation, and unfortunately for me, it's an ongoing situation now, I know what my intention is. I just wanted to be here for as long as I can. So I'm simply, there are many, many days where I don't feel brave for all sorts of reasons, but I think it's the human nature, isn't it? Just to keep going.
I couldn't agree more. I think people imagine that there's a lot more weeping and wailing goes on in the rooms where you find out you have cancer or the first appointments and things than actually does, because it's shock, isn't it? Mm. And I don't know about you guys, but with my upbringing, my first reaction to any doctor is to be incredibly polite and say, thank you so much for telling me. Thank you so much for telling me that I might die. That's very interesting information and I'll take that home. Thank you. It's not, I think, the way that a film might show it where you fall. Maybe some people mm-hmm. do, but my experience, I've not fallen to my knees and beat mm-hmm. my breast and torn out my hair in front of a, well, I didn't need to because it did all fall out on its own. But I didn't do that. I think my reaction was quite contained in the immediacy of the situation because, like Emma said, you are just coping. Mm. You are just moving from one moment to the next.
I mean, I don't feel that I am very contained. And I remember on the very first night of the diagnosis, you know, back in 2010, I actually remember kind of, you know, probably quite a melodramatic way, banging on a pillow on the sofa and my lovely dad sitting to my right, my sister, kind of people just not knowing, you know, I was distraught. Mm. Mm. But it's funny, I think it comes out. And then at other times, I might seem incredibly contained and kind of like, I'm fine. And I think it is, and it's that classic thing, isn't it, of people kind of tilting their head to one side and saying, oh, but, you know, can't talk about what I'm going through compared to what you're going through because you're so this and you're so that. And it's like, look, I'm okay. But we're not always okay. Yeah. And this is what I realise more and more. You know, we're just managing in any moment.
Yeah. It's a question of just having to get on with it really, isn't it? And there's no real choice in the matter if you want to, you know, get the cancer out of your body or, you know, try to have the treatments where you're going to, you know, be recovered or like you, Emma, you know, keep the disease at bay. And it's just a case of getting on with it, doing it. And, you know, for me, again, I didn't feel brave at it at all. I felt slightly brave when I had to have an operation because I'm quite a fearful person, to be fair, and to be honest. And so me going into an operating theatre repeatedly was that did feel brave and I felt extremely scared about that, but again I didn't have a choice.
Emma, can I ask how old your triplets are, please?
They are now, they're 13 and a half, so yeah, they were 6 months
boys,
old
girls.
Two identical boys and a girl, and my eldest son has just turned 20.
Gosh. And so the triplets were what, how many
6 months old?
Oh,
6 months
God.
Old. I was a newly single mum. So my kind of, my life was already, I've said this many, many times, but it was already at what I'd call a rock bottom, absolutely, because of all of the drama that had sort of occurred. So it was almost that classic thing. I remember sort of waiting for the results and saying to but it can't be cancer, can it? I can't be that unlucky, bearing in mind how my life
what
was playing out.
Yeah.
And it, you do, you have that thing that you've had your quota. Yeah. And obviously not
you've
talking about
you've had your
the,
quota of shit.
Yeah, shit. And obviously not talking about the babies because they were a miracle, but they came with a lot of challenge and as a result, there was a lot of drama. Mm. And that's the kind of thing I think that's continued to blindside me. It's like, and there's something else and there's something else. But yeah, so my eldest son, who was about to turn 7, has a very different experience of mum with cancer as opposed to Ella, Louie and Theo, who were babies when I lost my hair. I haven't lost my hair since, thankfully. So Jake has the memories, you know, of as a 7-year-old of those early days. And the younger ones are much more kind of, it's not, luckily, and it's a privilege again, oh, mum's off for treatment. You know, I was at the hospital yesterday. They don't say, how are you doing? How's the hospital today, mum? It's like, what's for dinner? Because, but that's a wonderful thing because they just see it as the norm. Mm. Well, you know, I could do with the odd shoulder rub from one of them. Cup of tea. Yeah.
Can I just ask you, if I may, briefly, Emma, how did you cope with being a single mum with triplets who are 6 months old and an older child and getting a diagnosis?
I mean, I've got to be completely honest. It was the most horrendous, well, one of the most horrendous times of my life. But actually, interestingly, I've talked about this so much. It's the emotional side of it for me that's kind of floored me on many occasions. So as far as the cancer treatment went at that point, as soon as I heard those words, you know, we know what we're going to do and there's a good chance that we can sort this. Mm. You're on that, as we all know, you're on that track, you're ticking through, you've got the security of the appointments, you lose your hair, you adjust to it all. For me, it was all of the other stuff playing out the drama. Mm. So I didn't have the luxury, in inverted commas, of being able to just be a cancer patient. I was feeding the babies through the night, dealing with a very, very volatile, toxic breakup, you know, fear levels very high, drama playing out still. So there was no opportunity to process. And then it was ironically, just as I was kind of coming through the 4 or 5 years post the primary diagnosis, and I was starting to feel like, oh God, it came back. So, but I think, you know, because I remember when I was that primary patient, I didn't want to hear the word secondary. I didn't want to talk to anyone who had a secondary. I would put my fingers in my ears and run out of a room. Mm. But I kind of feel passionately about saying, you know, 13 years ago, if I'd known where to look for stories of long-term survival, that would have just helped me so much. And I didn't know where to look.
Yeah.
So I kind of hope that, you know, and I have many, many difficult days, but I really, really hope that for anyone at the beginning of that journey, and I'm sure, you know, the greatest chance that it's their one and only experience, but that it's, they can take comfort from the fact that many of us are living in the long term.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing that you say, because I'm a primary breast cancer patient. And reoccurrence is something that I've had to have a lot of tough conversations with my oncologist about, chances of reoccurrence, all that kind of thing. I've attempted to have conversations with my friends and family about it, but you can tell they just don't want to know. They hate that you've gone through this, don't want to think about you going through it again. And it is really helpful. You know, I'm sat here next to Emma. She's wearing this cute outfit. She walks in wearing coral orange lipstick. And it's obviously, it's not about how you look. But if I were to think of myself as a secondary cancer patient, I'd like to be this kind of one.
Definitely.
Walking in warm, kind of confident, smiling. It's not what I would imagine, because what you imagine is, well, limitless despair is what you'd imagine. And obviously, there is that too. There is sides to everything, but it's amazing. It's very inspirational.
What you're saying is so, I'll take it, and it's lovely, but all I have to say and caveat it with is that this has taken, this is me today.
I was,
as I wrote in my book all those years ago, I was absolutely crippled and consumed to a paralyzing degree by the fear of recurrence. And it's colored so much of my life. It's colored my parenting. It's colored my relationships. There were times when I was barely functioning, because the fear of it coming back was so great. And then it came back and I thought I was going to die. And then that was 8 years ago. And it's taken a very, 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 very long time for me to, and, you know, the third diagnosis was probably a bit of a turning point alongside stepping into the online community and seeing, Julia, you know, so many other men, women, many women in the breast cancer community, not only living with it, but living life with it. And so this, I really thank you. And I'm so glad that that's how I seem today. Yeah. But it's, honestly, the darkness is, it's been a very, very conscious mindset shift as a result of reaching a mental and emotional bottom where I cannot continue living like this. I cannot, I'm not living. I'm not, I was living as though I was dying. And, you know, even in, you know, 4 or 5 years of remission, I'm back in, I'm 4.5 years in remission again. And I'm not brave. So if you talk about brave, I can be feeling a niggle. I won't tell anyone still. I don't tell you. That's why I don't shout about check your boobs, know the signs, because I don't practice what I...
Sure.
I'm terrified.
But
I've managed to find a way of shrinking it a lot of the time. And that's the kind of mindset shift. It's such a long journey.
Thank you for being so absolutely open. And I'm in a different room to you, but I can see you sort of reaching out your arm to Laurel, who happens to be sitting next to you. We are going to talk about some happy stuff. If I may. But really quickly, Juliet, let me just ask you this. There may be some listening right now who are thinking, look, you know, don't be talking about happy stuff and living bravely and boldly, because I'm not sure I can do that. What we all understand that. We totally get that. But what would you say, Juliet?
Every day is different. You know, some days you may well feel that you feel fine, you feel happy, you feel brave and able to take on whatever that day might throw at you and to kind of go with it, embrace that, you know? I think it's all, for me anyway, it's about living today. Tomorrow, I might feel like total rubbish and, you know, not want to get out of bed, not even want to go and see my friends, which happens quite a bit to me, to be honest. I think everybody's definition of bravery or boldness is so different. You know, I think I've done quite a lot of things that people might consider bold, taking my top off, dyeing my hair bright blue, you know, loads of other things that I've done. I find those not brave at all. I think those come really easily to me because I feel passionate about what I'm doing them for and I know what I want to get across to other people. The things that I find really difficult when I feel really scared and fearful are things that other people do every day, going in a lift, going on the tube, you know, going on holiday. I find it incredibly hard to go on holiday. So I think bravery... Oh,
the lift and tube bit, I get, because that's claustrophobia. Yeah, going on holiday, it's like getting on a plane.
It's everything. It's leaving my home. It's my safe place, my haven.
Yeah, it's a security thing. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I get that.
So therefore, bravery is totally an individual thing, you know,
sure.
And just go with it. You know, that's what I think.
Laurel, you have postponed your wedding.
Yes.
But you also went to about 16
I went to
others?
A lot whilst I was doing chemotherapy. It felt like every other weekend I was throwing on a wig and literally I was using foundation from my forehead down to the tips of my toes because all of my body was so grey and drained looking. I've been watching a lot of Wimbledon the past few days and, you know, they keep citing that poem that's engraved on the player's entrance, the If by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head... And I think that's what a lot of people's view of bravery is. Mm. It's big, it's grand, it's these huge gestures and actions. And I feel like they need to kind of create a revised version of that poem for cancer patients where it says, if you manage to get up today and brush your teeth, then you are brave. Mm. If you manage to have a chat with your neighbour about the courgettes that they're growing and not break down in tears, good job you. Because these things can be very small. And so for me, turning up at a wedding when I was really devastated to have to... I keep saying it's cancelled and my boyfriend gets really annoyed. It is postponed. But when I had to postpone mine, it was really difficult. People expected me... Or I think, maybe they didn't, but my imagination told me people are expecting you to be a kind of benevolent Mother Teresa with cancer, you know, gracefully accepting people's good wishes and their prayers and saying, thank you so much, I'll get through it. And actually, I was walking around like a bitter little witch. And I was thinking to myself, I hope it rains on your wedding day because I don't get to have mine. I'm so cross with you and you're my best friend. I want to enjoy this for you, but I am immeasurably jealous that today all you have to think about is whether or not you look right in your dress and whether or not your husband makes a nice speech. You're not sat here worrying about if you're going to be sick in the church or if you will be alive to still plan your own wedding. If your partner still wants to marry somebody who has a pretty good chance of not being around in the next 5 to 10 years, and should you write a will, all that kind of thing. And it's very, very difficult. And I think to people on the outside, that sort of thing might seem small fry. It's fun. You're getting dressed up. You're going to a wedding. You look great. So why? What's the worry? But for me, it took a lot out of me. I went to hen do's, baby showers and weddings. And I found it extremely difficult. And I really had to shore myself up beforehand and steel myself to go into these social interactions where, you know, you can't really be fully honest. Yeah. People want to know how you're feeling. They say, how are you? But you can't turn around and say, consumed by the ever-present fear of death, how are you? You just say, oh, I'm great. No, don't worry about me.
I know.
Isn't this wedding beautiful? And
it's
very difficult.
It's sort of that etiquette of not giving too much information to the person who has asked how you are, particularly if you're at someone else's wedding.
Yes.
I mean, it's so interesting, Laurel. You said sometimes, you know, just getting out of bed is a brave thing. Do you agree with that, Emma? That it's okay not to overreach. It's important not to overreach.
That's something that doesn't. I feel like my situation's so extreme in that. Because of home life and because of the way that first diagnosis was with, it doesn't make me a hero. It was just how it was. But I didn't have one day where I stayed in bed because I had babies that needed me. And as much as I had friends and family gathering around. And so I still find it, and also, so now all these years on, and of course, when chemo floors you, it floors you. But with the kind of treatment I've been on for the last 8 years, the side effects are less, you know, it's much more manageable. And so for me, it's more of it'll be a physical sort of mental and emotional low, sort of more feeling depressed and worn out and not listening to my body and not knowing when to stop. But I have really negative associations with staying in bed because it makes me feel like I'm unwell.
Okay.
And I'm so scared of feeling unwell. And it's, again, I keep coming back to that thing of the definition of bravery. And as we're talking, things are popping into my mind. Like, bravery to me is my, you know, is someone who says, I'm not going to worry about that. You know, I've had the scan. Who knows? What can I do about it? Nothing I can do. And the reason I can sit here today, feeling as I do, is because my body isn't flagging anything up to me.
Okay.
So I can, you know, and I just feel very strongly about that because, but in terms of the rest, I mean, life doesn't seem to really, haven't quite mastered that because, you know, I've gone from baby triplets to toddler triplets to primary school triplets. Now I've got teenage triplets and I kind of, you know, I'm a single parent again and I'm desperately trying
to... What do you mean you're a single parent again, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I got married... I met my soon-to-be ex-husband at the time of my secondary diagnosis. And that marriage sadly ended last year. You know, that's been another big adjustment. So having gone from initially being on my own to...
See how hard this is for him to try and vocalise. I'm looking at now is brave.
Mm.
This is extremely brave.
Yeah. You do. Emma, you are a really, really inspirational person. I know that's really hard to hear sometimes, but when I see what you put on Instagram and things like that, and the way that you have really tried to adjust your mindset and to, you know, take all of these experiences that you've had that would have floored so many people, but you kind of hit the deck and you come up again. And when on the way up, you're looking at yourself and trying to get the mindset that's going to keep you going for your kids and for yourself.
And
honestly, you don't know what effect you have on other people. Seriously.
Thank you. That's such a beautiful thing to say. Thank you. I think it's just such a determination to make sense of so much that's happened. And I'm at this point in my life where I look at my teens and my 20s and my 30s and I think, I've now got this phase where the glasses are off or whatever expression is. I have an understanding of, to me, what life is about, and it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Sorry. And it's intense and it's endlessly challenging. But there's this sort of dichotomy of like this acute appreciation an acute sense of gratitude, you know, with also kind of still feeling like I'm trying to keep my head
staying
above water.
Afloat.
Understood.
Yeah, so, and then I'm in this sort of dysfunctional phase at the moment where I have this huge sense of urgency for not because I think I'm not going to be here, because that's a low volume at the moment. I feel like even if something progresses again, you know, there'll be options. But it's more just this feeling of wanting to not miss a moment and just wake up one day and think, oh, I get it now. I get why that happened. I get why I'm at this point again. Anyway, it's a therapy session with Victoria.
I know, it is.
Love it.
And by speaking like this, it's, as Juliet said from your Instagram, but by speaking like this and being so just going with the emotions, it's going to help so many people. Mm. I don't know if that helps you to know that, but I'm just telling you, it is a fact.
But
it will help people.
That's what I feel like my purpose is, to be honest. I feel like I know why my purpose now is to that's why I don't care how vulnerable I appear, or yeah. I don't care. You know, there are certain things I won't talk about because it wouldn't be right. But in terms of my own experience as a mother, as a cancer patient, as a human being, and people say, oh, but you, it's so helpful, thank you. It's like, no, this is reciprocal. Yes. By me sharing my experience and my story, and then, you know, us all just feeling safe together to open up, and it's just, you know, we haven't met before. No. Juliet, I know you a little bit, but how, you know, Victoria, but how lovely, you know, we can all just reach out to each other and we get it, and we're all in different stages, different phases. But to me, that's what I want to shout from the rooftops about.
Sure. Hearing this would have been deeply helpful to me kind of when I was going through treatment, when at the time, through Instagram algorithms, through well-meaning but stupid friends and family, I was flooded by messages of, you're a pink warrior, go out there and fight, kick cancer's butt, etc. And I was sat there thinking, or, you know, also, have you thought about going vegan?
Yes.
Did you ever did you used to smoke? And it's like, well, I didn't, but if I had, what does that mean?
That helpful? Mm.
Yeah.
And the thing that I found so hard to get my head around was the acceptance. It's almost like a nihilistic attitude of what has happened to me and to everybody that in this group of four is just unfair. There is no reasoning it. There, I don't think I'm going to reach a place where I think, ah, this happened to me for a reason.
Yeah.
To be honest, I just think it is deeply unfair. And I have wrestled so much in my mind of why me? Why? There is no why me. It is completely random, like getting struck by lightning. Yeah. And unfortunately, it has happened to the women in this room. And you know how you said, I feel like I've reached my quota of shit. Nothing more. And that's how I've felt. Yeah. You know, I went for a job interview a few days ago and I didn't get it. And I thought, but I had cancer. Yeah. Yes. Surely, surely I should be able to have any job I want. I've been through enough. But it's just not how it works, is it?
No, absolutely. But it's interesting as well. I think it's really important to say, and again, I hope, if someone had said to me, you know, again, the power I gave to that secondary word, honestly, I was unwell, you know, mentally, psychologically with that level of fear. But I can honestly say, despite the tears that are often close to the surface, I've had more joy and more happiness in the last few years.
No,
you can edit a little bit. Press pause. But I have.
We're not editing this.
Happiness is. And again, I look back to my, you know, earlier years, and I think I was kind of low, or everything. There was a lot of angst, and I think, talk about contrast. I mean, I believe life is made up of contrast, and there's no arrival point, and there's all the kind of colours of the rainbow and the spectrums of emotion that we fluctuate in and out of constantly, regardless of whether we're dealing with a huge catastrophe. But God, I know what pure joy is over in tiny fragments, but I haven't been able to access them very easily recently. I have days where I think I'm never going to be happy again, but I still feel so strongly that, and I agree with you, I think it's bloody bad luck. But, and I know it sounds corny and cliched, but there are gifts. It doesn't mean that you wouldn't go back and go, no, thank you. But there are gifts in terms of your development as a human being, in terms of your emotional capacity, in terms of your compassion and empathy and awareness. And I look at my sort of dysfunctional setup at home and my four kids and how kind of crazy it seems so much of the time, but I think, okay, whatever my concerns are as a mom, these kids surely are developing something that might not be showing itself yet, but in terms of life, that's going to stand them in good stead.
I think I may rename this episode, and we go from bold and brave to quota of shit. I know what pure joy is now. I'm going to ask Juliet, what is pure joy for you right now?
Mm-hmm. Gosh, well, for me right now, pure joy is getting up at 5:30 probably, because that's when I wake up, going out into the garden with a cup of coffee in my red and white stripy mug, which has to be the morning coffee cup, and looking at what flowers have opened in my cutting garden, because that's what I do. I grow cut flowers for me, just for me. So at the moment, the dahlias are opening. And lovely. I am obsessed with dahlias.
Yes.
I've got about...
What colour?
The ones I like most are the really dark, dark black ones, like huge, huge ones. But or any colour. I've got 50 in this little tiny bed, which I care for like they're my children. And so for me, pure joy is going and looking at the flowers and just going, how did that happen? How on earth did that happen? And then when I see a bee sort of landing on it and doing what it does and a butterfly, so... That's what I love at the moment, and that's my joy.
You're going to make me cry. Just talking about your little
And it is a little simple thing, but it makes me so happy. Yeah,
wonderful.
Laurel, can I ask you the same question?
3 weeks ago, I moved back to London, so I lived with my parents for most treatment, and we were joking about the fact that it should have been a miserable year, should have been the worst year ever, and obviously it was. But in and amongst that, there are these lovely little things. And my parents live in the Lake District in a very rural community, which I became deeply embedded in. I'm practically leader of the local council now, me and a group of other 90-year-old ladies. I'm working on a tapestry cushion. Big things are happening. But it was just those smaller things. I would walk my neighbour's dog most days, and I would see, in the spring, I saw the lambs come in and the calves and nature. Mm. It's interesting, actually, that you immediately pick on it. Nature is... You know, people talk about when somebody dies, they can't believe that the sun has risen the next morning. You think this shouldn't be happening. And when I was diagnosed, I remember in Sweden, it was in the spring, so the sun didn't really set. And I remember thinking, how can this still be happening? Mm. The world's worst thing has happened to me. How is life just going on? But being in somewhere, being in the countryside where I could see the change of the seasons was really deeply therapeutic for me. And it became a running joke that the people in the village would see me go on what I called my daily rage walk, where I would go alone with my neighbour's whippet and I'd listen to songs very loud on headphones and flail my arms around and
what
rage.
What kind of songs, Laurel?
Well,
like what?
Very embarrassing. Anything from like Dean Friedman to a bit of Taylor Swift to a bit of Meatloaf, which my boyfriend made me put in there. Literally anything, as long as I could scream it and kind of startle the animals in the fields. But just being outside and just having a moment of peace was pure joy for me, even in the midst of pure shit.
Yeah. I always end our episodes by asking our guests what advice they would give to people listening right now. And you have all done a little bit of that throughout this episode. But as a summing up thought, what would you say to those listening who cannot imagine that they'll feel pure joy again, or cannot imagine feeling bold or brave or positive?
The darkness that you're feeling today, the all-consuming fear and will pass. It absolutely will pass. I would say don't be so afraid of the frightening outcomes that you miss out on the positive ones. Nowhere to look. It's surrender. It's surrendering, and it's also allowing yourself to be held if you have the privilege of being held emotionally, whether that's by one person, two, three, four, a village, a street, whatever. But it's your thoughts. So just follow the light. anything, because it's everything that goes on up here that has got the power to either make it absolutely agonizing or kind of okay, you know, chunking it, breaking it down.
Julia?
I think I'd go along with what Emma said and just a little bit more like, don't believe all of your thoughts, you know, because
absolutely
your mind...
Just because you think them doesn't mean it's true.
Exactly, it's not true. And your mind is going to be playing tricks on you. You know, it is fight or flight, but your brain is going to be telling you lies. And so I think hold on to that if you can. And if you can get outside, try to do that as well. You know, just deep breaths in some fresh air, I found really helpful.
Yeah. I would have two little pieces of advice. Firstly, when I was first diagnosed, I thought, I'm going to keep myself to myself. I'm going to hibernate, lose my hair, grow it all back and emerge into the world like a beautiful butterfly with a bob and kind of keep this secret. I didn't want to be vulnerable. My nickname with most of my friends is the Ice Princess. Yeah, I didn't want people to think of me as...
You didn't want pity?
I didn't want pity. And to be honest, I was quite harsh. I thought, I don't want to be seen as a loser of life. I was a winner. I was glamorous. I had an amazing job in Sweden going around fashion auctions and art auctions. My boyfriend's glamorous. I live in a beautiful apartment. I've got lovely legs. Oh, this can't be happening to me, all that sort of thing. And actually, you know, cancer, I lost a lot of things to cancer, parts of my body. I lost my ability to live in the same country as my partner. I lost my job, all sorts of things. But the community that I found has been huge to me. And I remember turning up on the doorstep of Future Dreams with my mum, completely terrified. I'd isolated myself from all of my friends because I didn't want to experience the pity. I didn't want to be vulnerable. And I was enveloped by that community. Even just sitting here, you know, you feel a huge sense of connection with these really two women, Juliet and Emma, that I've never met, and you. And that's extraordinary. And I think embracing that is huge. And then on the point of being bold, I thought being bold after cancer meant signing up to ultramarathons, running away to Thailand and living in a yurt forever. And actually, you know, I've got electricity bills to pay. I can't spend my days, you know, travelling abroad and things. And so for me, being brave and being bold is in the minutiae of every day. It's applying for jobs and sitting there thinking, I am confident, I am capable. Yes, I might have been ill, but it hasn't changed that. And just being, you know, boldness is just the small everyday things. And don't hold yourself to this Instagram standard of, if I'm not skydiving, then I'm not being brave. Yeah. Actually, if you are, you know, those things can provide you inspiration. Sometimes I'd look at a picture of a woman running around London in her knickers and I'd think, I'm not brave enough to do that. But I am brave enough to get up today and make myself something to eat and get on with what I'm meant to be doing.
So
I'd say the little things, you can be very brave in the minutiae of the everyday.
So live your best life, whichever way your best life is for you.
Yes,
that's what I think.
You know. You three have been absolutely amazing. Honestly, thank you so, so much. And can we please all meet up at the Future Dreams House very, very soon?
Definitely.
Sounds good. We'll try and bring some Mirabeau gin, which Juliet was telling us about before we started recording. Which sounds amazing. Juliet, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Laurel. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Emma, thank you.
Pleasure, thank you.
Well done. And Then Came Breast Cancer is brought to you by the Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity, which provides practical, emotional and psychological support for anyone diagnosed with the disease. It's a factory original and 6'6" production.
Our podcast is intended to be a message of support for everyone who has been touched by breast cancer, and that's why our guests share their personal and unique stories with you. They express their personal opinions, which don't necessarily reflect those of Future Dreams or our sponsors. Our guests' individual stories do not constitute medical advice and shouldn't be treated in any way as a substitute for professional expertise or a consultation with healthcare professionals. This podcast is not offering to treat your cancer, but it is trying to help by talking about it. So hopefully you realise that you are not alone.